Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Hi, everybody. I'm Joanna.
And I'm Jenny.
And this is Hyphenated, the podcast about living in the hyphen. And I haven't seen Jenny in weeks. And I'm just so happy to see your face. It feels so weird to like go weeks without talking.
I know. It's bizarre. I really honestly hate it. It's like I feel like I'm missing a part of me.
Oh, my God. Missing a part of me. Missing a part of me. I just imagine just like images como fading into each other of you crying while like rain falls down a window.
Like an 80s ballad.
Yeah. And then me too, you know, and it's just like it's because we live far away in L.A. Like you live in Burbank. I live in Santa Monica. That's the equivalent of saying I live in Arkansas and you live in Wyoming, you know, like it's
for real, bro. I was actually in your neck of the woods yesterday because there was a Larry David pop-up.
Oh, right. The Latte Larry pop-up in Venice or in Culver?
In Culver we went.
Yes. That's very close to my house.
Yeah. Lucky you.
I have been spending most of my time pretty much watching movies that are nominated for the Oscars or like new shows. I feel like I'm going through a consumption era. I think consumption means something horrible, actually. Wait, isn't consumption illness that Victorian people used to die from?
Yeah, so they called it the consumption. They also called it the lung, otherwise known as tuberculosis.
Oh. Okay, just to be clear, I don't have tuberculosis. I don't have tuberculosis. I do, however, have an itch, an ache to sort of be up with whatever everyone's talking about that
you're
isn't
a consumer.
Taylor Swift.
You're a consumer.
God bless Taylor Swift, by the way. I just want to say I respect her. I think she's a great artist. She's not my personal cup of tea, but I do respect her. With having said that, because I'm afraid I'll be assassinated, I am a little bit like I'm done with the Taylor Swift news. I want to talk about literally anything else.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I've always been personally. When something's oversaturated in the media.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the hipster in me. I just, like, I'll like an indie band, and the moment they start getting played on the radio to death, I'm like, okay, this is over.
Oh, my God, you are a hipster. You are a hipster.
Because the radio, here's the thing. I think it's just, like, oversaturation is what kills it for me. It's, I don't want to hear this song 40 times. I don't want to see this celebrity on my feed all day, every day. It gets tiring. And I think that's even with our food, like, you know, I guess it's different for people on the spectrum because I know we all tend to have our comfort foods and we eat it on repeat. But you know what I mean? Like at a certain point, we do get grossed out after eating the same thing for a while, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting.
That's how I see it.
Margot Robbie actually, she's a great producer, by the way. She has her own production company, and she actually makes, I think she produced Saltburn, for example, which is a great movie. I love that movie. Not everyone loved it, but she produced Saltburn, wasn't in it. But she was interviewed recently, and she was like, yeah, I'm going to be away from the limelight for a bit. I don't want anyone to see my face. People are probably sick of seeing me. That was my Australian accent. but that was really wise, because she's like, okay. I need to make people want to see me again, miss me a little bit, because the saturation of it is too much. Yeah,
that's very smart. I don't think enough people think that way. So that's freaking awesome that she said that, you know, and that's her train of thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you watched a lot of movies that are like sort of, because, you know, because of the strike, a lot of the movies that were supposed to come out didn't come out because then actors wouldn't be able to market them and promote them. So all these great movies came out like at the same time, I feel. Have you been watching them?
I'm notoriously terrible when it comes to films. I'm a TV person. So if I watch the Emmys, I know almost every single show. I've watched every single show. When it comes to the Oscars, I am extremely clueless. I'm like, I don't know who to root for because I didn't watch any of these films. I did, however, recently watch The Holdovers. That one was actually a very good film. It's one of my favorites that I've seen in a while. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like that's my type of film, and I love the soundtrack because, again, I'm a hipster. So I, a tropical hipster. Pero I haven't seen, I don't even think I've seen any of the other nominate. Like, I don't even know what's nominated. I am that bad, okay, when it comes to the Oscars. Like, if you want to talk to me about freaking all the big TV hits, I got you.
Mm-hmm. No, I get what you. Like, yeah. Movies. Now, I mean, the average movie used to be 90 minutes long, and I don't think there's a movie that's nominated that is under 2.5 hours. Like, it is, the fact that movies have just progressively gotten longer. I watched Killers of the Flower Moon, and I wanted to die. I'm not going to say, my opinion on the movie is I didn't like it. I can say it's a good movie. I know it's good filmmaking. I personally didn't like it. I thought that it was too like removed from emotion. And I think that was like the intellectual point of the director. Like, I think Martin Scorsese was like, I don't want you to feel anything, just like these, you know, characters. Mm. But you'd have to do it for almost 4 hours. I got out of that movie and I was like, how am I expected to sit there for nearly 4 hours?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Illegal.
I mean, for people like us with ADHD, it's a nightmare.
Immediately jail. These people should go to jail.
I can't sit through. That's why I prefer watching movies at home, to be honest, because I can multitask. I can be on my Switch or on my phone or working on my computer. I can take a break mentally.
Yeah.
Like, you know what? They should just bring intermissions.
Oh my God.
If movies are going to be that long, claro, you know what I mean?
Claro. I used to go to a movie theater. The town in Switzerland I used to go to, because my grandpa would go every year, had a movie theater. And it didn't matter the length of the movie. Right in the middle, they stopped. And you had 15 to 20 minutes to go get a snack, to go. And I just thought this was brilliant and genius, because I'm like, first of all, better for the movie theater. You have otra tanda de gente gastando plata and their snacks and their drinks. Brilliant. Yeah. And then as an audience member, it's like, sometimes I'm like, I need a break. Like, this is far too much.
And it sucks too, because if you got to go to the bathroom, especially with that long of a film playing, I always feel awkward because it depends where I'm sitting. I'm going to get in the way of people. Then you're going to miss parts. So you have to like calculate, okay, when is the best time to leave that I'm not going to miss anything major. So if films are truly going to continue on this trend of being over 3 hours or at 3 hours, there should be some kind of intermission, 10-minute intermission for the sake of just bathroom usage. Jesus Christ.
How are presidential candidates not talking about this? How are they not making this part of their platform?
It should be a talking point.
This should be a talking point. This and daylight savings. Just these two things. Imagine if politics was like that. Maybe in Norway it is. That's all they have to worry about. It's like intermissions in movies. This is what my platform is about. And removing daylight savings times. Those are two time sensitive things that I just...
Yeah, bro.
Well, I've recently been watching Griselda on Netflix, which is, you know, a series about the infamous Griselda Blanco, one of the few, if not the only, I don't know, female drug dealer. It's not even dealer. It's like drug head drug honcho. Lord. Drug lord. God?
Well, when it comes to women, do they call them madrinas? Am I going crazy here?
What, a madrina? Because the godfather. I guess madrina, like, because it's like, it's the godfather.
But technically, like drug lord. Technically, drug lord.
I don't like that word. You're going to call it a lord? You know what I mean?
Call it like
a drug CEO. You know, there's some like problematic CEOs, but a lord?
Yeah, I'm know. Like, also, what century is it? I don't, okay, continue.
Okay, so I'm watching Griselda, right? And like, I'm gonna be honest with you, like, I'm personally, hablando de saturación, being saturated, I'm a little saturated with the whole drug kingpin narrative and storyline. Like, especially, you know, my husband's Colombian, his family, his parents watched it, but then my sister-in-law was like, bro, I'm not fucking watching that. I'm done. I'm from Colombia. Como que no quiero más cuentos así. Me da ladilla. But then simultaneously, I'm like, okay, well, but like, this story is pretty astounding. It's like an insane story. It's a story that I think is worth telling. It's not a story that isn't worth telling.
Mm-hmm.
It casts and employs a bunch of Latinos de Latinoamérica, o sea, incluyendo Carol G. And, right. You know, a lot of people I know worked on it, whether it be in the edit side of things and the pre-production. Like, it really employed a lot of people, the directors from Cali, Colombia. Like, it's, mm-hmm. you know, it is something that is on number one on Netflix that is produced and created by Latinos. But simultaneously, it is reiterating the same storylines that we've just seen a billion times before.
Right. Here's my conundrum with this. I don't think there's anything wrong telling that story,
mm-hmm.
because white people, from the beginning of white people, have gotten the opportunity to tell every story under the sun, every genre, every true, you know, every story, whether fictional or based on a true story. They've gotten to do it all. And it's A-okay. From serial killers to slasher murderers to fucking psychopaths to also drug lords to gang leaders to mobsters to... list goes on and on. And so I'm like, yeah, Latinos should be able to tell the same fucking stories because these are also true stories, like Pablo Escobar and Narcos and now Griselda, right? The issue at large here, I mean, I feel like we can write a book on this, so I'm going to try to keep it concise. A, not enough of our stories get greenlit. So then the problem is when there's like the five Latino shows on air and then one or two are about drug lords, then you're like, what the fuck?
It's like 50%. It's like, right. Oh, just 50% you're like, of our
exactly. Stories. You're like, what the fuck is this? Is that all you see us as like gang members and drug lords? The other problem is, sorry, I just blanked out because there's so much in my brain regarding this topic.
You look like that meme where El de Hangover.
Oh,
Zach Galifianakis. You look like the Zach Galifianakis in the casino.
My eyeballs are like straight to the ceiling because I'm trying to catch all the thoughts. Yeah, it's lack of stories getting greenlit, right? And then what I find fucked up, though, is, for example, and I can't go into too many details with this for,
mm-hmm.
you know, legal reasons, but there was a show that I was pitching not long ago, a year and a half ago, with a Latino-led development company, all legit people in the industry, and it was a true story. So think about Leonardo DiCaprio and Catch Me If You Can. Once mm-hmm. again, white guy, they get to tell this story, and that was also based on a true story. It's a very similar story, but for Latinos. This was had nothing to do with drugs, had nothing to do with gangs. Sure, there was some of that sprinkled around in the true story of it all, but at the end of the day, it was about a young Latino who was a genius,
mm-hmm.
okay? On the spectrum, nerdy, not your typical macho fucking gang member, whatever stereotype that comes to your mind about this specific person. Not at all a match.
And this is a real person.
It's a real person.
This is like based on
reality. And I get it. He's, by definition, yes, he's a criminal, but he's also a genius. And this has more, there was so much more to the story. And we made sure to really make it about the family and really strong female characters. Just very fucking good. Very funny. It was kind of like a dramedy. And across the board, every single network we pitched it to loved the pitch. They said it was one of the strongest pitches they've ever heard in a while, but they couldn't take on a show about a Latino criminal.
So what you're saying is that there was a time, or if it's still happening, where people were like, no, we don't want to paint Latinos as like evil or bad.
Or flawed in any way.
But, right. But then what I don't understand is, I get it. I get that. I don't get it. I mean, I can wrap my head around the logic of it, of like, oh, we don't want to be written up in the Atlantic for making a story that's problematic and reiterate stereotypes and all that stuff, which I don't think this particular dude, I don't know what his name is, but although problematic, you know, breaks stereotypes that people might have about Latinos.
Right.
But the irony is that these shows, which are super violent, which there's a lot of flawed characters, the characters are inherently incredibly flawed. Like these shows, these Narcos, these Griselda shows are incredibly popular. Like there's a reason they keep on being made. It isn't because they're like,
they do very well.
It's an easy sell.
It's like La Reina del Sur. That one did super well. Also, like my mom binged the shit out of that show.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
It's interesting también porque la telenovela, the telenovela, like I think is evolving and changing. And, you know, some of the ones that you just listed are telenovelas, essentially. Pablo Escobar, the original Pablo Escobar that was, you know, done in Colombia,
right,
was a telenovela, had like 120 episodes.
Right.
Ironically, I think the telenovela format, which is, you know, every day there's an episode and it goes on forever, I feel like is the most true to form way to tell stories this complicated, because there's so many episodes, you can see the character change and evolve and all this stuff. Uh-huh. And then for a lot of these streaming shows, it's like, oh, it's 8 episodes and we cover a decade. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know, man. I think that we're simplifying these stories a lot. So then it's like, what are we going to sell? And it's like the selling is the violence. It's the sex. It's the this. It's like the most guttural things to sell to humans. Like, I don't blame them for wanting to sell their product. Like, you know, the irony is like they're trying to sell the product the same way the drug lords are trying to sell their product in the most flashiest of ways.
Right.
But it's like, you know, there is a reason why people are feeling very frustrated, because I don't feel it, because I guess I don't know. Yo no soy colombiana, so I might have a separate, you know, opinion about this type of stuff. Like, do I feel saturated? Absolutely. But there's a lot of people that are like, bro, fuck this. Like, stop making these stories. But I think what you're saying is very true. If these stories were being made and there was just a bunch of other stories,
right,
de Latinoamérica,
right,
que como que de Colombia, en por ejemplo, en particular, que contrarrestra, that counteracts the amount of these type of stories. So I don't think people would be that upset. I don't think.
No, that's what it is. Mm-hmm. That's honestly what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. If there were way more Latino shows and movies out there, various genres, various cultures, various skin colors, everything. Just like how white people have had their shows forever and ever, amen, we wouldn't be attacking every single Latino showrunner of the one show that's on air, because it doesn't represent everyone's experience, whether it's via class or race or culture, like, oh, another Mexican show, or oh, like, this show is too many white Latinos, or this show is another criminal. Like, that's what sucks, is that we don't have enough stories out there. And so when the one story comes out, just like those networks had a big issue with the one we were pitching, they all agreed across the board that this is a phenomenal story. And the fact that it was based on a true story. And keep in mind, we were pitching this around the time that all these shows were blowing up on TV, these miniseries, like the Anna Delvey series, the Elizabeth Holmes series, the freaking Jared Leto series about WeWork.
Oh, yeah. But like, basically, all the scammers.
All white. All the scammers. All the scammers, but they were all white people. But that was okay. This story has very similar, it's very similar in that he's a scammer. Miami is a city full of scammers. Mm-hmm. Period. The end. I say this as a Miamian. You can talk to anyone from Miami and they will tell you it's this hustle culture, this I'm going to scam you. There's a lot of medical fraud, insurance fraud, like up the wazoo. And so that's a thing, right? Like, so we thought, oh, we got this in the bag. This is a fucking true story also. And it stars this guy who's autistic. And again, very similar story to Leonardo DiCaprio's Catch Me If You Can. And they just couldn't do it. And some of the networks even had the gall to say, well, if this is the one Latino show on our slate, it can't be about a criminal. And then I'm like, bitch, why is it your only Latino show on your slate then?
Yeah, I think it's very complicated. And I think what a lot of people don't understand, and I'm gonna this isn't devil's advocate, but I think this is more like insider trading. What? I don't know. Uh-huh, I'm listening to Martha Stewart podcast about how much of a scammer she is and how mean she is, but we'll talk about that another day. But 99.999% of things that are pitched don't go anywhere. Like, right now I'm working on 6 ideas for shows that I'm pitching. I'm sure none of them will get picked up. Like the amount of like death upon arrival of show ideas, no matter even if they're amazing, is super freaking high. So if you already have the problem that, you know, they're struggling with understanding a Latino story that doesn't fit the paradigm, specific paradigm and specific, you know, things that they need. You're already at a disadvantage in a world where it's almost impossible to make it. Como que se pone, es imposible. Y como que you might have all of the things in perfect motion and with perfect casting and with the vibes are immaculate for it, but it doesn't work out because of the timing or because it's the person that you were pitching to was in a bad mood. Or, so it would help if there were more Latinos in executive positions, I'm sure. But even then, I think it's like so hard that I just find it interesting that there's so many shows, like so many drug lord shows. Like that's what I think is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I was just having that exact train of thought, especially after what I went through trying to pitch a show that was very different, that was very family-centered, that was very much a hyphenated experience. And I wish I could explain more here, but I can't. But I'm like, this is a show not about a Latino criminal, about a genius on the spectrum. And we don't get enough stories like that about Latino geniuses. And for some reason, that one doesn't get greenlit, but the drug lord ones do.
I just think it's weird. And I'm very. Do you know what I mean?
That's like, what exactly like that's what confuses
me. How many times have they successfully gotten to a pitch room, and no one is like, bro, we already watched 7 of these. No, every single time they're like, yeah. You know what?
Yes. You don't say. You know, that's what I don't understand. I think that's where I am a little bitter. It's like, okay, fine. You don't want to take on our story because this is a flawed Latino character who technically is a criminal, but also brilliant. And this isn't your fucking 100th drug lord story. And they were so scared to take it on because of that element. But I'm like, but then who are the people who aren't scared to take on the drug lord ones? I'm just baffled.
Wait, do you think we are? Okay. You know that like in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, like every movie about Italian Americans was about the mafia. Like even Analyze That, which was a comedy with Robert De Niro and Billy Crystal? Anyway, that movie was like a comedy about a therapist. You had Mickey Blue Eyes, which was a comedy about a guy getting married. And all of them, every time there was an Italian American, it was like, oh, but he's part of the mob. Like, you know, like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Como que, I feel like we have a lot in common with Italian-American creators. Como que, you know, creators, directors, whatever, people. Because there's this, like, subset of them that there are a lot of interesting stories, of course. The Mafia was an incredibly interesting moment in history. Like it is, it has remarkable plot points, characters. Like it's already there. Like The Sopranos is one of the best TV shows in the history of the human existence.
Right.
And it is because it's so high stakes. You have, yes, you have drugs. Yes, you have corruption. You have, you know, sexism. You have violence. You have ingrained in the concept and the world. You have like the worst of humankind already in your world. So it's like it appeals to our most basic selves. And so I don't know, man, I would love to see a conversation or something between like Latino showrunners and then like Italian American showrunners from like 40 years ago and see if they had stuff in common. Like I'm sure an Italian would go pitch something and be like, it's an idea about a beautiful Italian boy who comes. He's like, oh, but is he part of the mafia? Is he part of the mafia? You know?
I mean, hey, as someone from Miami, I've also been, so this is what Miami people are tired of, okay?
Miami.
Every show, for the most part, that takes place in Miami, it's usually, it's like Burn Notice. It's fucking like, I don't want to throw other shows under the bus, but
I mean, you're always not throwing them under the bus. I think you're just listing them.
I mean,
here I am. I'm like, okay, I am the amiga.
I think a show that did a decent balance at it was Jane the Virgin, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because you have their family life in La Casa de la Abuela, which was very well set design, might I add. So you see that part of her life, and then you go into like the fancy hotel drama scandal stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But so that one I definitely give a pass to. But there's a lot of shows that take place in Miami and even movies, and it's always about drugs. It's always about parties. It's always about South Beach. It's always like some scandal, violence, fucking strip clubs.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, that's part of the culture, sure. But I'm like, coño, bro, can we please get a show that shows Miami in a different light? And that's actually what we were trying to do with this other show, where we were going to show more of the family life and all of that versus like the crazy side. But even without that angle, like just a show, bro, that is in Little Havana and it's not about fancy hotels in Brickell with like rich tourists from Europe. Like, can we have like a low middle class show that takes place in Miami with a full spectrum of Latinos? Because again, Miami is not just Cubans and Venezuelans. Like, that's the other issue I have too. I'm like, we are a really big melting pot of Latin America, and we are also doing a great disservice to that demographic when it comes to Miami specific shows. But so I get it. I fucking get it. Not just as a Latina, but even from Miami, all the stories are always the fucking same. It's always the fucking same. And I'm like, coño, like, okay, I get it. South Beach. So then the problem is someone like me out here in LA tells someone, oh, I'm from Miami. Where does someone's brain immediately go to? They go to cocaine. Yeah. They go to like yacht parties. They go to South Beach nightclub. Yeah. And I'm like, we are more than that.
Dude, Miami, God bless Miami. But every time I go, I'm like, I'm just hanging out with my family in a house with a lot of stucco. I'm at a mall. I walk on the beach. I see a Trump flag. And then I go home. Like, it's really kind of boring.
I eat a croqueta and call it a day.
And it's great. And I
like,
love it.
There's just so much more to tell. So then that's why I'm like pissed, because they're like, oh, we can't do that. Like, this character can't be flawed, or this Latino dad in this show has to be fucking woke, even though, you know, like, and I'm like, okay, this is unrealistic. Like, we need to make characters flawed so they can grow and have arcs and make things interesting. And so there's conflict and also relatability and authenticity, because no one's going to buy half of this shit. And
I think it's really interesting what you're saying. Also, como que the way that Miami is depicted y como que como eso afecta a lot of how people perceive, people that aren't from the place perceive it differently. And there's a lot of, o sea, There's positive externalities of when a show like represents a place positively. For example, The White Lotus, even though there's a murder in it, spoiler alert, you find it out in the first 3 minutes. Like the amount of tourism in Sicily, which is where I believe season two. The amount of tourism in Sicily, like, incremented by, like, 200%. It was something ridiculous because everyone was watching the show and they were like, wow, it looks so beautiful. It looks so stunning. I want to go there. I want to, you know. So, you know, right. I'd say that's a positive. And I think that they depicted Sicily in a way that was really wonderful. The characters felt very rich, very real, very grounded, very interesting.
Right.
But then you have a negative externality, like dark tourism. And I was talking to my friend who spent 6 months in Medellin, y ella me estaba contando, she lived with a tour guide, and she was like, she was telling me how so much, even though Medellin is such an amazing city, so many cool things to do, great transportation, wonderful culture, so much of the tourism is dark tourism. And dark tourism is a phrase that basically means people that go for the wrong reasons to a place. And that mm-hmm. includes, you know, going to sex workers, drugs, looking at Pablo Escobar's, like, old house, like, all this type of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think there is dark tourism in Miami. Como que yo sí 100%. Creo que atrae, it attracts a type of tourism sometimes because of how it's represented in yeah. different shows. And yeah. so people create their, like, the way that, it is remarkable how shows have a huge impact in how people perceive things that they don't know, because that's the first foray into it,
mm-hmm.
you know?
And it sucks. And that's why, like, I've worked so hard to try to depict Miami in a different light. That's, you know, authentic to my experience. And again, it's not going to match everyone else's experience, but I get it. So it's like, It's a very difficult debate. It's a similar debate to, like, shows about maids, you know, Latina maids. And I have family members who are housekeepers, and my friend's mom comes in and helps clean my house every now and then, and she's a fucking whole ass human being, like, you know what I mean? That doesn't deserve that disrespect either. So again, I think it just comes down to, like, we just need more representation across the board. Because yes, there should be stories about maids that are Latina because they exist and they're real and they're people who have full, rich lives. And it shouldn't be a profession that's looked down upon. I think that's the issue when it comes to the maid type storylines.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
I think you bring up a really important point, which is in an effort to be like, we don't want to touch stereotypes. We don't want to dive into stereotypes. Like, there's a way of telling stories that are very true that don't feel stereotypical.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Como que entiendo, porque I've been in meetings where people are like, we don't want to do a maid in this show. But, like, for example, when we wrote, when me and Jasmine wrote Princess of South Beach, which is a mm-hmm. narrative audio telenovela we wrote, we had a maid, but the maid, I don't want to give anything away, like, is probably the most interesting character in the show, because she's, the maid part is just an entry point, and then her character is just super, super crazy and interesting, and with a lot of different motivations and a lot of crazy history. So the maid right. thing is just like, that's it. Como que es como, we also played on stereotypes on purpose. We were like, we're going to do all the stereotypical characters, and then we're going to break the stereotypes by just making them interesting people.
Right.
And so como que I think that it's really hard when, you know, executives, like people that greenlight series, they listen to like a dozen pitches a day. I don't know how many. And I feel like it's almost like they don't have the time to consider that something could be more complex than what. So they have these like trigger words. So these right. trigger words are like a hard no, a hard pass. Like, no, we don't want to touch this because this might be too, you know, stereotypical. We're going to get in trouble for this. While I think there's so much more nuance, like a story can be really good while still having a lot of the archetypes that we're used to. And
100%. I think, I don't know if you remember the hullabaloo.
Hullabaloo.
Sorry, I love that word. Surrounding the Disney animated series Primos.
Yeah, I do. That was crazy.
That was crazy and also infuriating in so many ways. But
wait, maybe we should explain it a little bit. There's an animated series that sort of hadn't come out yet. And then Disney just posted their title sequence on a YouTube channel without much context. And that sequence got basically ripped apart online with people claiming that it wasn't representative of Latinos and that it fell into some problematic Latino tropes. But there was just no information about that this show was based on someone's life.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Jenny, go ahead.
So the show was based on someone's life, a Los Angeles native, Mexican American. And I think there was some flaws in the marketing where they said it was a Latino show and not a Latin American, you know, hyphenated show that takes place in America. That's from an American Latino's experience. So a lot of people in Latin America got wind of the show and thought it was supposed to represent people in Latin America. And they didn't understand that this show is actually for American Latinos. That's a whole other arroz con mango. But for example, it's based on the creator's true life where every summer all her primos would come and stay in her house. She even has a photo of her and all her cousins when they were kids in the Bible. And she had to share that in order to prove herself because I'm telling you, I mean, I know you know this too. They were all getting death threats.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It was really, 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 really bad. They were getting bullied relentlessly. Many of them had to like shut down their social media accounts temporarily. And one of the things that people had a gripe with was the fact that it was a household filled with cousins. And they're like, this is so racist or this is so stereotypical. And I'm like, first of all, I'm like, I'm sorry. Yes, this is true. A lot of Latinos experience this. Also, the show is about the summer where they all come to visit. But even if it wasn't just a summer thing, why are you going to hate on and be dismissive of someone's experience? I tweeted about this at the time. I'm like, I'm infuriated as someone who also comes from a low income background. That how come when it's a Latino show that is more on the poor side or, you know, like a big family living under one roof. Oh, it's okay for Full House to do that because it's a bunch of white people. But when it's Latinos, it's racist and stereotypical and like low, you know, middle income. Oh, that's racist. I'm like, so are we as Latinos just embarrassed? Is that what it is? Like, I'm not saying there's plenty of wealthy Latinos. There's plenty of successful entrepreneurs, et cetera, et cetera. And yes, we can share those stories too. But like, why can't we have blue collar shows? Why can't we show, because all my fucking videos are representative of my upbringing in a low middle class household where we didn't have the nicest things and we had a lot of hand-me-downs and fucking, like, we would trade things with neighbors. Like, I think it's terrible if other Latinos are calling that stereotypical. To me, there's a much deeper issue there. Como una pena. You know what I mean? Like, oh, we can't, white people can't see that we're poor. White people can't see that we're this. White people can't see. And I'm like, why not? This is our reality. Like, that's what really gets to me. And I know there's people that can do things in a very tactless way that comes off very like mawkish. I don't even know if that's a word, but you know what I mean? Like, there's a way to do it right.
Yeah.
And still and properly represent.
Before,
right.
You can't dismiss it before understanding and watching it.
Right.
Like this whole dismissing of ideas and shows and concepts because of some... Honestly, it's annoying because it's like, Mira, I understand the world is really complicated. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of shit happening and we're all struggling and I get it. And we're struggling also to be seen and heard in a way that we feel good about and comfortable with. But it is my biggest gripe. Yo creo que there's too many people with opinions. I think people need to shut the actual fuck up. I think most of the time, people's opinions don't need to be expressed because they don't have the information necessary to make the opinion. And this is not just about entertainment. This is about the world. And this is why the internet for me is like, okay, it's a beautiful place where we're able to, you know, we have knowledge at our fingertips. But simultaneously, it's also a place where everyone thinks that because they have access to the information, even if it's minimal, their opinion not only needs to be heard, it needs to be like plastered everywhere. Y yo creo que mucha gente create opinions on shows and movies and, well, obviously politics and people and you know, geopolitical conflicts. They make their opinion based off very little information. They make it a talking point. They feel good about destroying something or saying their opinion loudly or abusing someone online because it makes them feel holier than thou. Mm-hmm. And I want that shit to shut the fuck up. I'm done. Bam. Drop my mic. I can't. It's an expensive mic. I don't want to drop it.
Thank you. I mean, I am with you, man. I'm at a loss a lot of the time. And I myself am in the process of pitching and working on stuff that I would love to see someday on television. And I'm already terrified because I've heard so many horror stories from you, my friends who are TV writers, showrunners, etc., who are Latino, and other people of color, my Asian friends, my Black friends, who have gone through similar situations with these executives who essentially are trying to water down everything about us. None of it makes sense because I'm just like,
parece, o sea, people are always like the executives. And I'm like, I don't know, man. It's the whole system. Like, it isn't.
No, you're right.
Like,
it's not just person. The executives.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
I said usually, that too. Yeah.
Sabes, como que usually it's just a person with a job that is just trying to. It's just trying to do their job, and right. That job. In a big conglomerate that just like a studio that bought another studio that bought another studio. And now like, you know, everyone's getting fired and what the studio wants is unclear. Like it's the whole environment is very complicated right now. And even the whole entertainment industry is sort of struggling quite enormously.
It's really struggling. Yeah.
And so I don't, you know, another thing that I sort of don't like is, there's like villainization of like, oh, there's these people that are making it impossible. And I'm like, I'm sure that's true in some instances, but I think generally it's just the entire environment is problematic. Like,
no,
like,
it is. It is. You know, it is. Como it's not just the execs.
I don't know I don't know. I think the only way to fix it is to keep like just telling stories that are compelling.
It's,
you know,
I mean, I, you know how like it feels like every month there's a new article that is shared of like Latinos are not represented in Hollywood. I'm like, okay, bro, like tell me something, like please. Es la misma mierda every, like I feel like I see this same article every fucking month.
Times.
And then all the Latinos in Hollywood start sharing it, right? But a lot of them point the finger solely at quote unquote clueless white executives. And I was like, and I tweeted, I'm like, listen, yes, these clueless executives are a problem, sure. But we're also the problem. Porque, and again, I can't say much here. Porque I'll get in trouble, but...
We don't want to get in trouble, Jenny. We don't want to get in trouble.
I mean, Joanna, like, you and I have had these discussions.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of folks within every community has it, though. Like, again, I talked to my friends from various, the LGBTQ plus community of Hollywood, the Asian community, etc. It happens in all the communities, right? So it's not just Latinos, where even within our own community, there's a lot of gatekeeping. There's just so much there. So we need to look internally. Every time one of these articles comes out, we can't just keep pointing the fingers at executives, because enough of us have experienced negative situations within our own people.
Es muy fácil point the finger. And again, we're not saying it's not accurate. Like, there's an element of truth to it, of course. But just like everything in the world, everything's so much more complicated than what you read in an article. And then, it's because of these people. No, I think it's more complex and complicated. And I don't have the answers. But the only thing I do know is that I don't think anyone right now has the answer. So the best thing we can do is continue telling stories and continue pushing and continue helping those around us to get in the door and work with them. And I think ultimately that's what's going to work, instead of these incendiary, angry tirades on the internet. Like, that doesn't help me. I don't know where this is getting me. I don't know how is this helping, bro? But there's other things that are helping. Like, I do think that there's more production companies that are, trying to push more different types of stories and diverse storytelling. And I think that's great. And I think ultimately we might be moving in the right direction. That might be me being a little too positive and naive, but you know what? It's Sunday. It's raining in LA. There's no, there's no sunlight in my life at the moment. And I'm just trying to bring it in. I'm trying to shine on.
I love how they're like, there's a storm a coming. I'm staring out my window. I don't see a single drop of water. Y'all don't know what a storm is. Anyway.
Yeah, you're like, bro, in Miami, people be like, ay, vamos a la playa, hurricane passes. Okay, let's just like chill in the car and then we'll come 100%. Back out on the beach.
That's not even an exaggeration, though. That is not even like torrential downpour, palm trees falling, fucking someone's cat just midair. That is Miami weather. That's a storm. I'm looking out here and like, you know, say I see a leaf.
And that's pretty much it. And people blowing are like, stay safe. Stay safe. Don't go out to drive. It's really dangerous.
It's because
I'm like, it's raining. Do you not know what rain is? Like, it's fine. I think that this is a metaphor to everything we've been talking about. It's like, yeah, we've gone through shit. We can figure it out. It's fine. Like, why are you making such a big deal of something that we have the strength to figure out? Look at this.
I mean, I just like think also people are looking in the wrong direction. Like, I think, again, everyone's like, oh, look over there, the executives. And it's like, well, no, look in the mirror, too.
Yeah, it's look at like your peers. The rain is the problem. No, the infrastructure is the problem. Why did you build houses from cardboard? These are cardboard houses in a valley. What did you think was going to happen, Los Angeles? The rain isn't the problem. your fucking structure is the problem.
Right. Oh, man, I wish I could say so much more. Then I'm going to have to tell you privately after we finish recording, because...
Oh my God.
I'm sorry, y'all. I don't mean to leave y'all on this like ledge of chisme, but I mean, it be what it be.
Dude, what a great name for something. The ledge of chisme. I want like a telenovela called the ledge of chisme, or like a TED talk. Where a neuroscientist tells you why you just get off on chisme. The ledge of chisme.
But it's like unfortunate chisme. It's chisme that I wish didn't exist. It's chisme that infuriates me. And again, it is chisme that has to do with what I'm talking about right now, which is we also need to look within ourselves, within our own communities, because we are also a massive part of the problem, as much as we like to point fingers at the five white CEOs. You know what I mean?
Bob Iger loves our podcast. He listens to our podcast every freaking week.
I'm and sure he's he does, like, yeah.
He's not helping us, though.
All the time, yeah.
Well, speaking of really bad infrastructure, I'm not even kidding you. There's water in my bedroom right now coming from outside. I have to go clean it.
God.
What in the actual fuck is happening? Anyway, God bless you, my friend.
God bless you too.
Wait, what's the chisme?
So,
sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.